Hey, ready for one last Oscar podcast? Actually, you get two this time. I'm Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Joe from Low Resolution, Katie from Cinema Blend, and Nick from Nick's Flick Picks, and we'll jump right in. I think we fixed our sound issues. You can hear everyone.
How is everybody?
Joe, you sound so clear.
Oh shit, let's not ruin it. I don't know what I'm
Hello.
doing wrong, but apparently,
Hello.
Yay.
Hey!
Nathaniel, we were worried about you falling into some kind of coma. Well, we're glad you made it.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm now going through Octavia Spencer's IMDb, which I can't believe I hadn't done before this Oscar season. And
It's
all these.
amazing. It's
It's
amazing how
really
many
amazing.
ABC ran this little special, like it was like, where not where are they now, but whatever the opposite of that is. Like, how did they
Where
get
were they
you?
then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, wasn't there a Woody Allen movie where like he watches and he's like inserted into all these old movie scenes or something like that?
Zelig,
Yes. It felt like that. Like all of a sudden,
right?
everywhere you've been, Octavia Spencer was there. Like you're looking through old family photos and it's just like, why is Octavia Spencer next to me in all of these? What's going on? She's just been there.
That would explain why people were so thrilled for her all season,
Well, that's
like
why I feel
standing
like she.
ovations.
Yeah.
That's true. That's the secret of the standing ovation.
That's my happy interpretation of the standing ovation. When I don't
She's
want
one
to
of the.
think that it's like Hollywood is giving the standing ovation to the black lady for dubious reasons. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
white guilt reasons, that kind of thing. And it's just like, okay, Angelina Jolie, I love you, but then I think of like, wait a second, like odds are 65% of these people have worked with her. Like she's very well liked for a reason. So,
Yeah.
when is the time I get to talk about Angelina's leg? Should I wait till later?
That is like the topic on everybody's lips.
It is my it is one of my favorite things that happened at the Oscars. And Nathaniel, I think you're with me that it's like the awesomest thing she's done in ages.
Oh,
Just like
yeah.
being up there and being hot and like not caring who judges her for it.
Well, yeah, and it was so like I've been arguing with Kurt about this that he thinks that she didn't understand what she that it would be funny, but I think she totally knows that she's a
Yes, I think so
that she's a cartoon.
I think self-awareness is something Angelina has. I think she has noticed herself in the past.
So I think it was totally like, I'm a cartoon diva, now I'm gonna throw out my legs so that you can see how far the slit in my dress goes up.
Well, right,
But
because
am I totally bleak and awful for thinking that like she drew attention to the leg to keep us away from the arms? Because
yes,
it's scary.
yes,
yeah,
yes.
I know that's bleak.
I love her. I love her,
I do
but
too.
those arms, I too, they're, I don't know. I keep thinking like about Brad Pitt's propensity to date stick thing women, and
Yeah.
that like, and where Angelina was before she married him, and then it was like, I don't want to think that she's like subconsciously conforming to fit like his preferences. Hi, welcome to me reading way too much into Hollywood relationships, but
I can't
like,
believe you're doing that on the internet.
I know. Who would have ever heard of such a thing?
There's
I
not a
don't know.
place for
Whatever.
this.
There is no. It really isn't.
They need to invent a place to do that.
Yeah, I feel like my appreciation for the Angelina leg thing is also along the lines of my appreciation for the Jennifer Lopez, Cameron Diaz over the shoulder thing, which I was just like these two, because for all you would have known from the beginning part of that presentation before they came back from the clips, I was like, these two women have never spoken a word to each other in their lives, including the 10 minutes they were backstage getting ready to come out. Like they just felt so just cold and serious and not having any fun at all. And then when they came back and you could clearly see like they had choreographed that little thing themselves,
Right.
I was like, okay, well clearly not only have they talked, but they planned things and like worked out timing. I was like, okay. That I like. That I like the fact that they had that kind of playfulness in them. Even if it didn't, like Cameron said, she's just like, well, we gave it a shot. So.
Which
Well,
was also
it worked for
endearing.
me
Yeah.
on the TV screen.
Yeah,
Maybe
totally.
it didn't work in the room,
Well, that's
obviously.
true. Maybe in the room it's a different vibe. I don't know.
Must
I
be
thought
weird
it
when
was
you're in
cute.
the room and suddenly they're just like not facing you anymore.
That's true. They had to watch them actually turn around and like
Right. Yeah.
wait. Yeah, that's true. That would that would affect the timing of it. So what did we think overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, about the show, if not the winners?
I mean, Nick and I have talked about this many times. I always enjoy the Oscars, so I never understand why people are like, that was so horrible.
I know.
But I will say that I thought the direction was terrible.
Aside from the audio problems, I know you had the Cirque du Soleil problem.
Yeah, but I mean, that problem that I had with Cirque du Soleil was all over the place. I mean, it was the weirdest editing decisions. Like the weirdest go to camera three that that I can recall. It was so manic and so not even focused on what was happening at the moment. Like why on earth, when Jean Dujardin wins, would you pull the camera so far away that you basically miss the fact that he's tap dancing?
Wait, he was tap dancing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally missed that.
And then
he ran
back to the podium and it didn't show him. Like, you could see him, like, suddenly, like, bolt back to the... He was going to try to say something else, even though the music was playing. But the camera was, like, so far gone and so on... It's like, it was just so, like, somebody needed to take some meds.
The direction was as unenthused about the artist as the entire audience was.
Ooh. Except for the French people who were...
Well, they were loving it, yeah.
They loved it.
And good for them. Like, they won. That's their, you know...
Well, they were obviously enthused enough to vote for it, so...
Well, more than they voted for anything else. I have a feeling... I don't know. I mean, you know, trying to look into the minds of everybody. But that felt like less of a... Sometimes when a movie is sort of a slam dunk to win, you feel this sort of swell of enthusiasm in the crowd, even watching it on TV, like the Slumdog Millionaire year, where like they could not get enough of like cheering that movie along.
Why do you want to remind me?
Because I want to remind you that other Oscar ceremonies were more disappointing than this one. I don't know. It didn't feel like it was a ton of enthusiasm. I have a feeling if we looked at vote totals, it would probably be pretty spread out.
Yeah.
Well, when Hugo won all those technical awards, I think there was a sense of like, oh shit, maybe this is going to go somewhere totally different. And then the tide kind of turned toward the end of the night and it became clear. But for a while there, it was like, maybe Hugo's really putting up a fight here.
Well, then when Dragon Tattoo won editing, it was like, oh, they don't really love any of these movies.
Right.
Yeah. Like that would have been the award to just give to the one that you love so much that you just are going to check it for anything. And that was such a weird moment, and watching the winners be like, really?
I love that.
Well, do you guys love my trivia too about that?
They
are the first back-to-back editor winners since 1936.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's totally amazing. That's a great, I mean, what a feat there. That's awesome.
They absolutely did not. I don't think they even considered the possibility that they would win this thing.
They were really endearing. They were one of the more endearing winners of the night.
I love that David Fincher, he lets them out of their cage to attend these things.
Yes.
It's the only fun they'll have until the Play with Fire is done.
Yeah. It's so funny though that like that movie wins editing. And like, not to get all like Sasha on y'all, but like, how does that not then get even nominated in the top nine for Best Picture? Like, they clearly, I don't know.
Well, I mean, when you were saying
it's different, it's different. Yeah.
When you were saying they didn't love any of these movies, which is why the wins were spread out, I think maybe we should have keyed into that as early as, oh, there are nine nominees.
Yeah.
Many movies that had like five and six nominations with no Best Picture nomination, and it was really spread out the whole season. But in a way that could have been like, we love so many things, but instead it just played all season as like, maybe like Moneyball? I don't know. Or maybe...
Right. I feel like
War Horse? Did that have a sound effect?
I have to tell you that is the what I heard from Academy voters sitting at tables at lunch and somebody said,
I guess, yeah.
Alrighty then. We had one technical problem, but we fixed it quickly, so here we are again. We are a go, sorry.
Oh, awesome.
I had, for some reason, to re-enter my license, and now it's working.
Oh, good.
I apologize. So,
you got pulled over.
Huh?
You got pulled over and asked for your license.
Totally. So, if we could go back to, we were talking about Hugo surprising by winning so many, and Nick, you were about to tell a story about your dad.
So my dad calls, who is certainly in the circle of people who know there is a cone of silence over the Oscars, but the phone rings anyway, and he's calling to go, what's Hugo?
Right.
Which you don't really want people asking about the 11 times nominated, five times winning.
Most nominated, totally.
Biggest budget of all the Best Picture nominees.
And, like, he's not, I mean, he saw The Artist, you know, like, he's not out of it.
But, like, here's the funny thing, is the fact that, like, almost everything in the Best Picture race disappointed financially this year.
Except The Help?
Well, right. Almost everything. But, and obviously Midnight in Paris.
Well, no, The Descendants did very well, too.
How did Moneyball do?
Moneyball did okay. Yeah. But, like, compared to last year, let's say, when, like, there were so many unexpected blockbusters.
Yeah, like True Grit and Black Swan.
And yet,
And
clearly, like, The Artist and Hugo were both disappointments. Clearly. And those were, like, the two most high-profile movies during the night. Yeah.
But then that's always, like, such a weird time when people are like, oh, this black and white silent French movie only made $20 million. You know, like, I mean, I understand that, like, you're talking about, right?
Yes. But then, like, also the fact that, like, the ratings went up this year. So, like, wasn't that the one thing that, like, we could sort of hold on to when it came to understanding why people watched and didn't watch the Oscars? Was that, well, they'll watch when they've heard of the nominees and they won't watch when they haven't. And now it's like, okay, well, are we back to square one entirely and just people watch and don't watch at complete random and we have just no way of gauging this?
Well, my fear is that was about Billy Crystal.
That's my fear, too.
I hated it so much the other night. Like, I thought he was terrible.
I completely agree, especially all the, isn't this amazing?
I feel like he will get the credit, but I don't know if
it's
the case.
But as much as I didn't like him, I think it fits very much in with what was going on. Thematically with this year and everything.
Like his presence as a throwback?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember where I read it, but it was like, can you imagine Eddie Murphy hosting this year's Oscars?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Like, that's such a, I don't know, so ill-fitting.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, I think my basement's on SVU right now. Sorry. They filmed this episode of SVU partially in my building, so I...
Oh.
Joe turns out to be the killer.
Spoiler.
But, like, I mean, if Billy Crystal had... I mean, like, I think you're right. And, like, I think he's definitely being written up as, like, the throwback. But, like, what was bugging me all night was not only the whole show's obsession with moving us so quickly through everything that it just felt like we couldn't even pause when somebody won. But,
right.
But, like, all of his, like, if Chris Rock or any of the people they've tried out lately had used their time to tell Jonah Hill, don't worry, there's cupcakes for you at the governor's ball, or said, like, I wanted to hug the first black woman I saw after The Help, like, we'd be talking about how mean and tone deaf and not getting their audience they were. But none of that has come, or, like, to say nothing of the weird Sammy Davis blackface, like, he just seemed really astray.
Well, I feel like it's that same sort of Jay Leno thing, where it's like Jay Leno's whole thing is that he's Mr., you know, milquetoast, safe middle America, and yet if you ever actually watch him, like, he's incredibly insulting and just, everything's in poor taste and everything's terrible, and I think it's just like, well, America has decided that they like Billy Crystal.
And he certainly has decided that America likes Billy Crystal, given the astonishingness of it. His transformation into Mr. Saturday Night is now complete.
You know what, though? Here's what I will say. We all had this coming. And when I say we all, I don't mean us on this podcast, but I mean, like, Oscar watchers in general. Because last year after Franco and Hathaway and everybody complained, and everybody was just like, you know, I long for the days of, you know, Billy Crystal because he know how to do it. And it's like, this is, you know, welcome to it. Here we go. This is what you were asked.
I totally agree. But knowing how to do something and doing it in a way that is entertaining are different things.
Well, and what
like,
bugged me about
James... he was competent, but just not...
he never fell down.
He seemed kind of over it, and almost in a similar way that James Franco did, which is kind of what amazed me. Like, he kind of got up there and he did the whole thing, but it felt very routine, which at this point for him it is. But then you get people like Emma Stone up there who, like, seem excited to be there and kind of made it part of the bit, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know who scripted that Emma Stone thing and how pointedly they wanted to be making fun of Anne Hathaway during that whole thing.
Well,
I think all I could think of.
Yeah, that's all a lot of people
was that
think
some
of.
Writer was so annoyed by Anne Hathaway that they scripted that whole thing.
But on the other hand, if they really wanted to make it pointed, why didn't they have somebody aping James Franco instead of Ben Stiller?
Well,
you
that
said
is...
aping.
you said aping James Franco. That's actually pretty skillful, not bad.
You know,
I totally know what you mean. But it's like when she was just like, you know, oh, you know, I'll have somebody from the audience start singing with me. I was just like, okay. And that was my favorite part of the Oscars, no doubt about it. That was really fun.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
And it was nice that Jonah got his moment.
But it
wasn't about cupcakes. Yes.
That wasn't about cupcakes. I really have grown to like Jonah Hill through this Oscar season.
He's been adorable this whole season.
There's always one. There's always one that surprises me. That's, you know, one of the reasons why I love, you know, I will always stick up for, like, the Oscars and award season. It's like there's always at least one actor who I thought I didn't like, and then it turns out he shows up on the red carpet with his mom, and he's really, really nice and sweet and funny and not annoying, and takes, you know, terrible jokes like a champ, and then banters with Emma Stone. Like, how am I not going to like that?
And he seemed to kind of put up with everyone being like, what? You don't belong here. And he was like, yeah, okay, sure. I don't belong here, but I'm just going to go with it.
Or that every question was about, like, so how was it like to work with Brad Pitt?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not about how how did you craft that performance? It's like, oh, my God, you were
exactly
on the set with Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Is he funny? I bet he's funny. Yeah.
So, but Nick, what you were saying about them rushing through, that they couldn't even, I think that's part of the reason why I don't remember any acceptance speeches.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, they weren't really playing people off that much, but there was an element of, like, racing that I really don't remember. And I usually, like, pay attention to the speeches. And, like, I'm struggling, other than I remember Mark Bridges being from Niagara because I thought of you, Joe.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was very happy. Represent Western New York. That was great. Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, they got it done in 3 hours. Like, congratulations, we finally got a 3-hour Oscar show. That's what it looks like.
And does anybody like it any better for being faster?
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
No, there was no person the next day who was just like, what a refreshingly brisk ceremony.
Right.
It's, even at its shortest, it's too long. It's the Oscars. Fucking deal with it.
I know.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing that I wish that their board of governors would take that in.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you can't. You are what you are.
Right.
Yeah, and if you're confident about it, like, say, Angelina Jolie thrusting out her leg, people love you for it, even if they're making fun of you.
Nathaniel, don't say another word, because they will remodel the Oscar statuette to have it sticking its leg out. They just will. Stop that right now.
Yeah, they're just so, like...
Love me!
Yeah, they're so weirdly pandering, and yet...
Yeah.
And yet unwilling to change. At the same time.
Yeah, their idea of pandering is to be like, here's Morgan Freeman talking about how he actually lives through the silent cinema. And also, Tom Hanks and Adam Sandler. Who's enjoying this for the third time? Like, if you're going to pander to me, feel free to pander at any point.
Right.
I really liked those, like, actors talking about movies
I
that they love thing until Adam Sandler shows up. And it's like, that was the part where it's like, you really don't get what you're doing here at all, do you? You're just kind of, it's like when they put Twilight in that montage at the beginning, they're just throwing things at you to be like, hey, you like this, right? Or this?
Yeah.
Yeah. You like something?
we'll give you so much more of it. It's like what Hollywood does writ large.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's probably why we have 9 to 10 nominees.
Yeah.
You don't like that one? Here's this one.
I don't mind times when they're like, when they'll throw a Twilight clip in or something, you know, otherwise unsuitable. If the idea is like, well, this year's ceremony is sort of a yearbook of the year in film. I like
that.
But I feel like this year they didn't know whether they were going to do that or whether it was just going to be all, you know, hearkening back to the past.
I think they definitely knew they weren't doing that. they seem to have zero interest in this year in film. Like,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think that I thought we had 9 nominees because we had a weird range of movies that actually had really like small but vociferous pockets of support in a way that I thought it would have been a great, I mean, I know it's long, whatever, but I thought it would have been great as a chance to like hear from the disciples, you know, like really voted for those, like Extremely Louds and Tree of Life and stuff.
And like, those are the things I like. I like when I hear like unlikely, well, it was like Gabrielle Sidibe going on and on about My Left Foot. I love shit like that. But make that it so about great. This year's movies. Like what this year did she like that was, you know, would have been unlikely.
Right. I mean, like why not have like, I mean, I heard a few people on the red carpet, but the Oscars really need to think about the fact that people are more interested in the red carpet and start thinking about, I'm not saying that they should, like, the show should take place on the red carpet and should be, what are you wearing when they accept their Oscar? But if you think about it, there are actually a lot of times on those red carpets, even for all the inanity, they are actually talking quite a lot about the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, I think everyone should be in burkas until you've watched at least 6 technical categories, and only
and then you
to get the reveal. And only Angelina will stick her leg out from her burka.
Those reveals would be very dramatic, though.
They would be
really great.
They would be.
What did we think of the like 7th year in a row that they've done a revision on the Best Actor, Best Actress presentation, where now it's basically 2 sentences of personalization before, sort of the 3rd iteration of scaling back from that big, fabulous, extended 5 former winners welcome you into Valhalla.
Right.
I wasn't sold on it until Colin Firth did his, and then I decided that Colin Firth should just do that in every category every year.
Every year.
Because his delivery of that was so perfect.
No, but you know what? Sandra Bullock was pretty good at that last year.
She was. She definitely was. And it's not an easy thing to do. Like, it really, to try and sound spontaneous when you're that scripted and sort of warm and personal, that's a tall order.
Well, and that's why I think it's a very much a crapshoot to do it that way, because whoever wins the year before is going to be the one doing it. And Natalie Portman obviously does not have that kind of star persona where she could do that.
Well, and also she's so young, and it's really hard to buy this thing where she's just sort of looking, you know, looking at George Clooney and being like, George, like, we've had all these moments together. And it's like, we have it. Like, you're still so young.
And next year, Jean Desjardins going to come up there and struggle through the English. And
yeah.
Although I will say I was glad for the return of the clips. That was the one thing I missed with the speeches, because I love the clips. And I thought that was kind of a nice balance of having that plus actually seeing their work.
Well, no, I mean,
and it wasn't the one where George Clooney cried, which was great.
Yeah.
Because we all got our fill of that by watching Jeopardy for the last month. Because holy crap, were the Descendants ads in full force every time I've watched Jeopardy all month.
They've
just so funny. Like,
I can't say that I have watched Jeopardy in the last
month. Yeah, I can't speak to that.
I DVR and watch Jeopardy faithfully. And it was very, very, it was bordering on like infomercial level, where it's like this half hour of television is being brought to you by the Descendants.
Oh, speaking of commercials, was anyone else, and I haven't heard anyone talk about it, but I haven't been online much. When did they start allowing movie commercials? And if they are allowing them, why was there only one?
I think it was last year or two years ago or last year that they started allowing them.
See, because like when Brave started, I was like, what?
Yeah, there were at least 3 that I actually like jotted them down. It was Brave, it was Titanic 3D.
Hunger Games.
Okay, I guess I wasn't paying attention during commercials. Yeah.
But the best ad, like by far, and I was off Twitter for the entire evening because I didn't want to be aggravated by anything. But I only popped back in one time, which was after the Revenge ad played, because I needed to see what people were saying about that, and it was appropriately enthusiastic.
The Revenge ad was so funny.
It was so and so perfect to that show. Like, that's exactly the kind of thing you want to do for that show, because it's so over the top and it's so melodramatic and awesome. And
I must have fast forwarded.
It was so good.
I love that show. It's like my favorite show.
It was so great. It was and expensive. Like, ABC like shelled out for that.
Did you guys see the Wes Anderson Hyundai ads?
What?
I don't think they aired in New York. There are these ads that Wes Anderson directed for Hyundai, and they look like a Wes Anderson movie. And all these people were talking about it on Twitter, and I had been seeing the Jeff Bridges ones, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And there are all these ads, and I don't know where they were. Maybe it was just L.A. or something.
Yeah, I didn't see that here.
Can we talk for a moment about our relief that the season is over? And I don't usually have this much relief. Because I don't usually hate the Oscars, you know? So I'm not...
Well, that's good.
Well,
you're not
one
of those people who cover the Oscars and yet inexplicably despises everything about them.
Right, and like constantly like, oh, what a chore it is to write about movies.
Oh, it's such a chore for these people. I, honest to God.
And like, so I usually am like a little sad because that means, oh, like now I have to wait for the build up for months and months, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And contribute to the build-up and whatnot, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a season.
But
I can care about things.
I had really had enough, and I think it was all the animosity. It was like particularly strong this year, like people just being hateful toward each other.
Yeah.
And I know that that's happened in other years, but I think because it happened in regards to Meryl Streep and Viola Davis this year, who are two of my favorite people.
Right. Yeah. Right. Of course.
So I'm like, I don't
understand why.
Yeah, I mean, I love both of those women, and those women love each other. I'm like, can we just not be assholes?
Yeah. I also think there's a certain kind of, like, you know, like, there are war-torn countries, and there are Switzerlands in terms of the Oscar sites, and usually people self-select pretty capably, but you kind of, like, you know, you are a Switzerland in my mind, Nathaniel. Everybody is happy and cheerful, and, like, I would not maybe say that about the comment threads on your side, specifically around those two women, and it just wasn't quite clear why that race triggered the things that it triggered. I mean,
well, particularly, you know, when those two women were so clearly warm and loving to each other
to
all
extravagant
season.
Degrees.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like both seemed like to be undisguisedly delighted to win, but also that February 27th would just be another day either way.
Yeah.
You know, like, so there's something about just like, we're all getting so sophisticated about Oscar narratives and so obsessed with those that like, getting further detached from being able to debate performance so that people aren't confused whether you only have political allegiance to your candidate or only historical allegiance to how many times she's lost. I mean, it just seemed like the...
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not everybody, but there's so much of that that just seemed like such a window into, like...
Well, I mean, doesn't it...
Territory.
I think that's a great point, though, that I hadn't really, you know, mapped it out in my head that it is... A lot of it is because of that narrative and because... It, for whatever reason, a lot of people who are obsessed with Oscars, I'm noticing, I've been noticing more and more don't actually see the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And so it's like, I think a lot of people who are obsessed with Oscar are obsessed with it as a competition.
Yeah.
Or it's the 11th comment they're making that reveals they have seen the movie. You know, like, that's not what they want to talk about, really.
Yeah.
But I see that everywhere, and I'm not just talking about my comment threads, because normally I love my comment threads and I love my readers and all that. I'm not trying to say that, oh,
sure,
I hate everyone.
Yeah, of course.
But it just seems like that's everywhere, that like people are constantly, or like, and 20 comments later, no matter what site you're on, they're like, well, I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, then why are you debating this so, you know, strenuously?
Well, and it does such a disservice to Viola Davis and Meryl Streep and whoever to sort of reduce them just to a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
When it's, and I'm such a big believer in narrative, like I really do think that like it does, there is a story being told about sort of the history of movies, and we're sort of living through it.
Oh, that's part of the reason I love it too. Yeah,
but it does reduce, you know, Viola Davis when you can just, when you know your only argument about everything is just like, well, she should have won because it would have been such a great moment, would such a great message, and blah blah blah. And it's like, okay, but like there was a performance in there too. Like that's totally, you're totally free to defend it just on the merits of the fact that it's a really great performance,
right?
Provided you've actually seen it.
Do you guys share some of the sadness that's out there for Viola Davis? Like, I think Guy Lodge was talking about this at In Contention. Just the idea that like that's like, do you have that feeling that like that this might not happen for her again that soon, and it kind of got snatched from her, or is that just engaging in the narrative that you guys are railing against?
Well, I mean, I always feel like there's somebody who, you know, if they, when they don't win, you hope that they'll, you know, get another shot. And like, I do think there are some higher obstacles for her, but, But I don't know if it's as, I was really rooting for her. I think Meryl Streep was so wonderful in her speech, and I was so happy for her in that moment. And I loved the, like, Roy Helland and Meryl Streep together,
yes,
getting
that
Oscars
cool.
on the same night was beautiful and seemed to mean so much to the two of them. So, like, that kind of cut into it a little bit. But I think that, like, my reason for feeling depressed was that as that category played out, I almost felt like I couldn't see what was happening because I was experiencing it through the prism of everything it was going to trigger, and in fact
right.
did. No
right.
matter what happened. Like,
and doesn't that
and
suck?
Meryl Streep even seemed to be, not to project too much, but some, you know, somewhat embroiled in that herself. Like, embarrassed to have won, not sure where to be. Like, I think it's amazing that she pulled such a, like, beautiful speech out of a moment that clearly started as, like, kind of awkward. And then it was suddenly over. And, like, I think I certainly thought that when Meryl Streep eventually wins her third Oscar, the standing ovation will be 3 minutes long, and then the speech will be as well. And that was not possible in this configuration.
Yeah, it was very strange. I will say about Viola Davis, I get the fact that, like, winning the Oscar is such a great, like, historical thing. But I feel like in terms of her career, in terms of career benefit, I feel like she still has gotten everything she was going to get out of this season, whether she had won or lost. Because at this point, she had been, you know, a topic of conversation for so long, and now sort of everybody sees her as this elite actress. And,
yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the roles were there or not there, regardless of whether she won. I feel like it's just going to come down to what roles are there. And I feel like I really don't see that, like, well, if she had won, somebody would have written a role for her to play. You know what I mean? Like, she already has the Helps box office heft behind her. Whether she's, you know, she's not certainly not seen as, like, being the prime mover behind that box office, but it doesn't hurt that she's got this, like, huge blockbuster under her belt. And that doesn't change. And, I mean, I think the upping of her general profile as an actress, that doesn't really change. Everybody has sort of lived through this season. And they saw her win SAG, and they saw Streep, like, make a, you know, special case to, like, embrace her after she won. I feel like her profile is maybe, I mean, if it's lower now than if she had won, it's, like, infinitesimally, like, small.
Well, you're trying to make me feel better, but I'm still a little sad.
Sure, of course. We all get to be sad, yeah.
And I think that, like, that sense of, like, an actress who really stood on the cusp of being rewarded for her meatiest role thus far at an age where a lot of people aren't, and a black actress in a group that's congenitally underrewarded, but winning for the work, you know, it would have been such an amazing kind of conflation of things you really like to see. But then again, I'm sympathetic to the people, and some of them have, you know, written some of the nicer comments lately, like the Philip and whoever, who've said, like, you know, if we now see her win for something that we don't even have to have this kind of static about, like, oh, it's a maid, you know,
right.
I mean, that'll be great. And it's never terrible to, like, I mean, I don't think, like, I was thinking about it in terms of Angela Bassett, clearly coming in second in 93, but she came in second to someone who was always going to win. And
right,
so she didn't get the, like, sustained media attention. And I don't know that she necessarily took the conversation in all the interesting places where this conversation has been taken during this campaign. So.
I actually thought, I mean, I didn't intend to talk about Viola and Streep this much, but just because I feel like it's...
Well, we've got our biohazard suits on, so we may as well.
But I actually wondered if some of the resistance to her winning within Hollywood... obviously, there was some resistance, or she would have won.
Well, wait a minute. Like, people liked Meryl Streep. I mean, I don't know that we have to read it as resistance to her winning, that she didn't win, right?
Okay, maybe. but I think when I saw her on these shows, like, I really love strong women and actors of either gender who really think about their craft and can really debate things about art. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily think a lot of people respond well to that, because it comes across to some people as too political or too strident.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I just wonder if that's some of the issue, you know, because they love princesses so much, you just sort of get bubbly and, like, oh my God.
But we've seen politics work at the Oscars before. I feel like, if she had won, it wouldn't have been the first time that, you know, that kind of a narrative would have been successful.
Right. I think maybe it's just that I worry about it because it seems like they, in general, prefer very meek women in some way, you know?
Mm.
And I'm not saying, like, obviously, to make it in Hollywood and to become, like, an Oscar-level person, none of them are really meek, but their personas,
yeah,
you know, sometimes are, like, you know, playing into the sort of, I'm just a princess, thank you.
Yeah.
You yeah. know?
I mean, obviously, Reese Witherspoon could, like, decimate entire villages if they pissed her off, but she could still play the, oh my god, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I think if Viola Davis had lost to Reese Witherspoon's June Carter Cash, I would feel differently about what had just happened. But, like, the number of reasons to include the performance that took Meryl Streep to the stage, like, I think that has, I've realized that has made it easier for me to not be as sad as I thought I would be if Viola lost. And it has also made me envious of sports fans, because I think there is actually something really satisfying to the, like, measurable close finish that you see how narrow I bet that vote margin was. Like, there's just a little bit of the catharsis of the series that goes to seven or whatever. And
sometimes.
Oh, right. Okay.
Sometimes it's oh so much more excruciating. But yes.
Yeah. But excruciating in a way that does some work, right? Like, you feel it in the moment instead of just like,
well,
you
and you can point to it.
Lost.
You can, yeah, you can point to it and you can be like, that close.
Right.
It was that close. Yeah.
And
right.
like, if there was something up on the stage that said and winning by two votes, like,
yeah.
I think the conversation would feel really differently than, like, you know, the impulse to worry that, like, they were against her winning. And I know that's not what you said, but, like, it does feel like a kind of slap
right.
in the face. Just
I'm just,
the
yeah,
was so
no, I get it. I'm just being, like, pessimistic, and because I always worry about it. It's the whole thing about actors being labeled difficult if they have an opinion, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have to see The Iron Lady? I still never brought myself to that.
Never saw it. Well, now
I have to say, I'm like dying to see it again now. It's been the
oh,
weirdest
yeah?
like, fallout from all of that. And I think I'm going to visit my mom next week and she wants to see it. So I think I probably will.
And that's the end of part one. We'll be back tomorrow with part two. Stay tuned.